Well, hello. I'm Pamela Badilla of Data Data International Folkloric Theater, and we're here this afternoon live web streaming for WGXC.org, our Cumbria Green County radio station, celebrating the music and the life of humanity in these two communities. Today we have Mr. Alan Skerritt, who I've been wanting to interview and record some ideas from him for many years. I admire very much this gentleman, and I've watched over the years him seemingly almost single-handedly bringing about a lot of dynamic ideology through the schools, through the NAACP, through the Parents in Partnership, and very much engaging a community for dialogue, which is so necessary and sometimes lacking. And so I had some questions which I had hoped to be able to address. Particularly, we were together at a celebration of RSVP a while back, and there's going to be a historic curriculum change. We're going to be learning about the African-American involvement in the Columbia County history. And for me, that's monumental. The achievement is, considering that children do not learn steadily about the Africans' involvement in the world history, to have that start, even just locally, that seems to me a huge and monumental change that will bring in the educational process. How do you feel about that?
Well, Pam, I have a couple of thoughts I'll share with you. My first thought is, I applaud and laud Marcella Beagle and the people who worked with her to develop this curriculum project. They worked long and hard in developing this project, and they were persistent. They never gave up, bless you, to bring this project to its completion. I think it's great that the education system will introduce it to, I believe, fourth to sixth graders in our education system. And I feel it's a beginning. I think that there's a lot more history to do with the African-American population in this community than we know about. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the effort by Marcella, totally addressed the kinds of things I would like to see developed. And maybe, perhaps some of them might not be what one would call curriculum material. But people here need to know what went on before them. For example, Marcella tells me there's no real history in Columbia County of African Americans after 1947. Well, I think that has to change, because the Hudson City and Columbia County communities were very different in 1947 than they are today. And people need to know what those differences were in terms of what we are experiencing now. I can remember families here who were two-parent families. I can remember neighborhoods where people kind of step-parented each other's children as they played on the streets. So you wouldn't hear a bad word, because before you got home, your grandma or whoever was there would go alongside your head because she got a call from Miss Grace down the street. And that you were out there making a fool of yourself. So there was that kind of community here. I don't see that here today. There were people here who owned homes, who owned automobiles, who worked in the cement plants. And in particular, there were men who were respected as men. And to me, that's the major issue I don't see here in Hudson today.
Now, excuse me, just a moment about that idea about the respect. I do notice in the community, particularly in the African-American community, that there is a lot of expectation for a certain type of a comportment. And even in the schools, I noticed that there's a way where some of the young people are expected to behave, and sometimes they address that expectation by giving the sort of behavior that they believe is expected of them. And in one-on-one, I noticed there's a lot of difference. You have some people who recognize their upbringing as being much more internally self-respecting until they get with their crowd, which they seem to assume that they're supposed to act in a different way. Do you think that the media has a lot to do with that, the musical trends or what they're hearing about them, so they want to bring that ideal to those people who have a predetermined assumption about them? That's one question. And also, with regard to this new curriculum, I too think that there are some things lacking about it, but you have to start somewhere. And in this schools, as we have been all these years, we don't really hear much about multi-ethnic culture. We don't hear much about the input of many different ethnicities with regard to the advancement of this wonderful country. And so a lot of kids go to school feeling uninvested, not very interested, because it's not a lot of their own heroes who happen to look like them. They don't see a lot of their own cultural heritage represented in a very pride-filled way. And sometimes that disengages them from the whole educational process. I'm very interested in that because I believe the discipline issue has a lot to do with the child not feeling invested. And so I wanted to talk to you about the Hudson City Schools and your role with the NAACP and that organization's history of bringing pride and dignity to the multi-ethnic community, not only African-American communities, but other people who have often been not fully understood and represented throughout the mainstream, which I still have issues about what is mainstream in a community that's increasingly culturally diverse. I believe that in these days we should see that the whole ensemble of any community, the mainstream is the vitality of that ensemble of community, the economics, the industry, the education, residents, and all about what makes people get together and enjoy socially as well as any means of interaction. So with regard to the little by little advancement that we make and achieve, how do you feel this will impact upon the children's immediate appreciation of self and then the need to identify as a group perhaps less and less because they have more individual pride?
Well, boy. Well, to answer your first question, if I can remember it, the media. I think the media has a way of making and breaking our society. And I think that's been demonstrated over the past 10 years, that the media has a great influence on the way we think and the things that we do. And the ways in which we socialize politically and in other ways. I think for us as a radio station would be best to identify what ways we could, as a local media, to identify what creative ways can we begin to address these issues in terms of our youth and their young parents. See, I think our parents have also missed some of the necessary parenting from their parents. And so you can't hand something down that hasn't been handed to you. And I think we live in a community where people have to learn to more or less fend for themselves at an early age. And that may be psychologically or socially. And that socialization, of course, begins in the education system.
Do you think they lack guidance in some way?
Well, I think they lack preparedness. I think both on the parent level and on the education level, because if we have preparedness, then our expectations are different than if we don't.
Okay. Now, tell me about, with regard to the preparedness, I remember over the time, many, many years ago, about there used to be an organization here, the Colored Citizens Club, for example. And that was because of a need for citizens to engage among themselves because it was not possible to interact fully in the community. During that time, there seems, from what I've heard, to be a greater sense of solidarity and support systems all around, the church and otherwise. Now that there is more of an opportunity for people to have a greater disparity in wealth and position, do you see that solidarity lacking, where people would look out for each other's children who are getting into trouble, perhaps, or look out for who's not studying so hard or who needs, a guiding hand more or less from before?
It's lacking, yes. Mm. I see it lacking. Mm-hmm. One thing about our community that, people don't seem to understand is that we are not a community of evolution of 100 years. Mm-hmm. We are a community of people who migrated here from other places in the South. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen happen, at least in my 72 years, is that the people who were here originally, like my grandparents from the turn of the century, they're all dead. And so the values that they instilled in the generations beyond them have slowly melted away. Mm. And what you have now are people who came here from the South, who missed the civil rights movement in the South because they came here, and missed the civil rights movement here because there never was any. Mm. So they've kind of been sucked up into a vacuum where they haven't been taught the values that would transcend from generation to generation about self-respect, respect for others, the importance of an education, and those kinds of things. So we need to look at that and identify that that is a circumstance. Mm-hmm. It's nobody's fault, but it is everybody's problem, particularly the community who suffers the consequences of it and the expectations that are being set up for them by various agencies that serve them. And I not only mean education, mm-hmm. I mean human services, mm-hmm. I mean social services, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. There are expectations that people will behave in a certain way, and so the participants of these agencies tend to provoke that behavior.
Mm-hmm, precisely. I noticed that as well. I have another question I wanted to ask you, because I'm involved, other than with the Jata Jata, the International Folkloric Theater, which is a family-based ensemble, and we deal with cultural heritage and education through the art. I do believe that our other organization, which I'm president of, Mothers United for Social Enrichment, and we have an annual scholarship where we give money to kids from Hudson and from Catskill. And through the 3 years that we've been doing this, I've been reviewing applications. And with that review, I have to notice there's a constant trend towards a certain need that these young adults are asking to have addressed. And that is a space of their own. Not the Boys and Girls Club, not a few hours here at another agency, which has very, very well-meaning programs and very dynamic, effective programming, but they need a place of their own. This is in Catskill as well as in Hudson, a place where they could know it's theirs. A club, for example, where they can go and have the internet and have food, a kitchen there, have opportunities to look at movies and do their homework and engage in an interaction among themselves for hours after school, or even when there's no school, even have parties there and such, and have high security where they can be safe. They always mention that they want to have a place where they can be safe and go to that place every day, any day, knowing that it's their own club, their own center. They can decorate it, beautify it, and identify it as their home away from home, where it's a space of their own. That does not exist here in Hudson, and from what I'm told, does not exist in Catskill, and a lot of young people address that need as being what would keep them off the streets and out of trouble, and not being so quick to fall into a stereotypical idea about young people who are unguided and wandering off track. Do you think that there could be some motivation by having the children engaging some time on the radio or perhaps some time in the newspaper, an article, a column, what would be an effective way to give their voice more amplification? Because they do seem to need that very, very dynamically. It would make a big difference in how they address their image of themselves and how the community would appreciate them.
The answer is yes. But you said something that I'd like to respond to, Pam. I've been asked many times by people, you know, sometimes people will ask you some silly questions and you have to answer them. They make you think in some way, one way or the other. They may make you think how stupid the question that was, but you still have to answer the question because they asked you of it. And I was asked a question, I have been asked a question by many people who would call themselves liberals, etc. How come you were able to have some success in life, or how come you haven't spent time, well, I never told you about, I never spent time in prison or jail. They assumed I didn't because I had a job or because I socialized with other people. The main issue here to me is mainstream. Unless people of different cultures can learn how to socialize with each other, they're going to be caught in their own tribal, within their own tribal barriers. And I think mainstream is the answer. What I really feel about people here is that they are basically afraid of each other by virtue of ignorance of the culture of each other.
Yeah, we're taught to notice those differences than the similarity.
Yeah, so if we can find ways to bring people together, especially children, I mean, it's not about you and me anymore. It's about our children.
Absolutely.
And our grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So I think if we can agree that maybe we've missed the boat on that very important part of what living in America is about, and you can look at other people who have been very successful in our society, and you can see that they had an early mainstream experience in their development. So the ignorance wasn't there and the fear wasn't there. With the fear comes the isolation and the hatred, et cetera, et cetera.
I believe even, as you say, ignorance, to me in many ways and over the time I've noticed, ignorance could almost be substituted for the reasons we have the hatred and all this. The reason people don't engage in the rapport which a simple society of being the proximity of being near each other would allow is that we've been taught so and so well not to appreciate the differences. Now, there's a thing I'd like to see about how you feel with the inauguration of our president, Barack Obama. Now, this is the first African-American president, but that notwithstanding, his sense of self and his sense of humanity, the simple dignity and overriding appreciation of everyone else's position, that alone to me would seemingly open doors to eliminate some of that ignorance and subside a little bit of what used to be a given that there's going to be some difference because somebody has a party issue or an economic or social some issue. It's different. But because he's there and has shown throughout his appreciation for everyone, do you believe that even though there's going to be some differences of ideal, that his position and obvious universal appreciation, would that not be able to, in and of itself, dispel a lot of the years and years of ignorance that have concentrated in people's minds just because they had no other knowledge to fill the void where ignorance occupies?
The answer is no, I don't think so. I think politics are politics. Mm-hmm. I think Obama could have been O'Reilly, and as long as he expressed the same ideals and policies and expectations of how the country should move, he would have been elected president. I think we've already seen that Obama being a black man has had no particular impact on the race issue in this country. As a matter of fact, I feel, or I'm experiencing, it's escalating.
You think it's because of people being angry at his election?
I think people are testing his power. I think people are going to do that when you have...
You kind of expected that, too. Even within the party, I noticed there's been some dissension. You know, you would expect to be more solidarity within the party. We've noticed there hasn't been, and in some issues, there have been lots of people seating from the Republican Party, Democratic Party. So these days, we can see you can't count on a party line, but that's not a bad thing. Sometimes you don't need to count on a party line, but use your sense of judgment, individual. But I was wondering if, for example, when a situation arises, there's going to be a lot of pressure on the president to react a certain way, and he's going to have to be judged not only because he has a sense of judgment and vision, but there's always going to be that background issue where he'll be judged because he happens to be an African American.
Well, my response is this. I think the president has often said that he wants to be a president of the people.
Exactly. I've heard that. I believe that.
He hadn't said of the black people the yellow people or the red people. He wants to be the president of the people.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Do you think that the American public as an ensemble appreciate that as well?
I think some do. I think some don't. Mm. We live in a very caste and hierarchical society.
Truly, truly.
And I think when we're talking about the people, when Obama says people, he gets characterized as a liberal or a socialist or a communist. And what he's saying that, you know, we are Americans and we would expect from our society a country where we all can live comfortably, eat decent food, have decent employment, and provide a decent lifestyle for our children and a good education for them. Not for black people or Latino people or any other people.
Now, what do you think about, you spoke about education and work and living. What about this whole health care issue? Universal health care seems to me to be a common sense thing. Everybody's taken care of, everybody's covered. It doesn't seem to be such an issue to organize it. And if someone says, well, your plan's not good enough, I feel a reflection of an immediate reaction, what's your plan? But do you think that that's going to come together sooner or later? Or is it going to be held up in political line drawing?
Well, you know, I was watching Bill Maher last night, and you know, what I got from his very bright guess was that when it boils down to nuts and bolts, people need to learn how to follow the dollar. you know, they were saying last night that, you know, a good percent of Americans don't understand the health bill. They don't even understand it. So how can you be pro or con for something if you don't know what it says?
So you think it's not been prepared or not been addressed well enough or explained well enough?
I think local politicians and leaders have to find a way to reach out to their constituents and explain to them objectively what is involved in the health care bill and what it means to the people. And what it means to insurance companies.
That makes sense. Get a better idea of what it is you're offering. It's new. It's very, very evident that it's going to change the face of healthcare. So I can understand the need to make it more clear to people. That's very good. I wanted to ask you also some other, I guess, some less dynamic and very pointed issues about your view of Hudson as it's evolved over the last, because you've been here quite a long time. So how do you see the evolution?
How do I see the evolution of Hudson?
Of Hudson as a community, socially, economically?
I see the country as having economic problems, and Hudson, of course, is a microcosm of that experience. I would like to see that once Hudson was able to recover locally from the economic situation we are experiencing, that it would mean things such as employment for the unemployed, people off of the welfare rolls, you know, that as we grow as a community, all segments of the community will grow with it. I think Hudson needs to have that collective attitude before that can happen. I don't know. I'm not sure it does right now.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to ask some of these questions that I've had in my mind. Tell me something that, before I close, I would like to ask your advice about what somebody, like, for example, we could do as an organization that's engaging in, and you know, we do theater programs. You've seen some of what we offer, the music, the dance, the sense of mentoring, the asking of the young people what's their program before we address what we think they need. You know, communicating among people to address the needs of those particular people for themselves. How would you suggest us going about as an organization to engage in that more fully and more dynamically and perhaps more effectively?
Well, I think we first need people to not see us as minstrels mm-hmm. or civil rights leaders mm-hmm. Or angry people who use various venues to rage our anger, mm-hmm. But that we sit back collectively from all levels of our society and identify, acknowledge and accept the what is, and then come together creatively to decide what can we do to begin to move our communities to more unity, more cross-fertilization or education. One thing I said to the person who interviewed me for the radio station was, when she asked me that question, I said, well, it would be good to have a radio station or a media that does make an effort to bring cross-fertilization to our various communities. Mm-hmm. And that would be on an educational and behavioral and value system level. And so there are three different approaches that we could use to at least entertain and develop programs that address those kinds of things, information to people, a discussion of behaviors. I always use the word reactions versus response mm-hmm. To issues. Mm-hmm. And then to kind of look at our values and see where do we get them from and what do they mean, what they really mean, mm-hmm. and what do we mean as individuals as opposed to a tribe.
I see. And I appreciate that. I like I said, I've always admired and respected your view and your position here. And it's been a pleasure to be able to talk to you and get some of that out. And I think that this radio station, this WGXC, is going to be very, very instrumental in giving voice to those without a lot of voice, amplifying the ideals and aspirations of many people, young, old, ethnic, of all sorts. It'll be an opportunity to bring the community together on all the forums that cause people to realize that this adventure of life is a dynamic and wonderful, intriguing one, and every day we add more to what will make through life because we care much more wonderful, more beautiful, because we engage in the community. So I want to be the first to say thank you to Kayo, who invited me to come this evening, and everybody who's involved in this radio station. I'd like to be very much involved, and Data, you can be sure we'll be fundamental in any way we can, offering our time and our talent, however we can, to engage and uplift and further promote this station and whatever it can offer to the community. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to interview Mr. Alan Skerritt of the Hudson branch of the NAACP, also a member with me of the Parents in Partnership, and I'm sure he's involved in so much else I couldn't even name it all, but he's a scholar and a mentor for me, and one of the people who I admire greatly in this community. So thank you, Alan. It's my pleasure.
It's been my pleasure, Pam.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Hey, Rich. How you doing, man?
How for you. Breeze drifting on by. You know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea. River running free. feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. And fly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. Shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. The freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life.